right, we're going to stay with Department of Fish and Wildlife for the next presenter, Steve Jeffries. He's a research scientist and marine mammal specialist there. Worked in a variety of Northwest marine mammal issues for over 30 years with a focus on harbor seals, California sea lions, stellar sea lions, and sea otters. Research efforts on these species have included studies about their general biology, distribution, abundance, status, trends, diet, foraging ecology, and contaminant pathways. You can do a lot in 30 years. Steve's going to tell us about it.
It's 40.
40.
Sorry. Thanks, Scott. Glad to be here. I'm going to talk about harbor seal diet and some other stuff as well. This goes down like this. Oops, go up. I'm going to talk about a little bit of overview of pinnipeds in Washington, harbor seal stocks and haul-out sites, scat collecting and interpretation of scats, that's the diet component, and South Sound harbor seal diet by month, and some summary and conclusions. This is the tip of the South Jetty. It actually is basically the upper trophic level that's in Puget Sound. There's harbor seals there, there's California sea lions there, there's stellar sea lions there, there's gulls, cormorants, and there's a pelican off the side of the picture there. So the system is very complex. Why do pinnipeds, white seals, and sea lions come to Puget Sound, the Salish Sea? This is up near Denman and Hornby Island in the Strait of Georgia. This is herring spawn. They typically are trying to find prey that's abundant and seasonally available to them when they move into the region. The first species I'm going to talk about is stellar sea lions. They're actually the largest sea lion in the world. Adult male gets over 2,200 pounds. That's a male and a male with females on the outer Washington coast. There's two stocks, an eastern stock and a western stock, defined by NOAA. The western stock is still, is there a pointer? Anyway, so the western stock is still endangered under the ESA. The eastern stock that's here, occurs from southeast Alaska down into California. It was delisted in 2013, so they're no longer protected by the ESA. This is the trend of the eastern stock, southeast Alaska, Oregon, British Columbia, Washington, California. In Washington, stellar sea lion numbers have increased from less than 500 to over 2,000 in the last 15, 20 years. This is old diet data from Washington, but as Dave talked about, hake is a big driver, herring is a driver. They eat a lot of dogfish, they eat skate, and they eat salmon. They eat adults and juvenile salmon. These are counts from 2014, 15, and 16 in Puget Sound. The main haul-out sites for stellar sea lions in Puget Sound are, actually they use the, there's some floats at the Cook Aquaculture Facility at Rich Passage, Manchester. So there's about 60 animals that use Manchester seasonally. Bangor is another area, and a few stellar sea lions are used Bangor. They occur here seasonally in the fall. They're basically gone from the Salish Sea in the summer when they're on their rookeries. They occur, this is the Tolaiwa Shoals buoy. If you go out there right now, there's stellar sea lions on most of the buoys in Puget Sound. This is the mouth of the Nisqually. There's a derelict barge off of DuPont. There could be 100 stellar sea lions on that barge. They move into Puget Sound in the fall, primarily following hake and feeding on hake and following chum salmon. So they end up at the mouth of the Nisqually in the fall because that's the last chum salmon run in Puget Sound. For more information on stellars, we did a periodic status review. You could go onto our website and pick up that document. It has more detailed stuff on stellar sea lions. The next species I want to talk about are California sea lions. Males and females. Male in the middle. They're, as with stellars, the males are three or four times as big as female. So a big California sea lion male weighs over 1,000 pounds, and a female weighs maybe 300, 400 pounds max. So this is on the rookery in San Miguel. There's a male with females with pups. The females with pups basically stay in California waters. We have relatively few California sea lions on in Washington, although there's a few records. Following the breeding season, the male California sea lions, there's about 50 to 70,000 males that disperse from the rookeries in California. They come up into Oregon, Washington, British Columbia, and up in Southeast Alaska. So 50 to 70,000 California sea lion males move up along the coast. This is their rookery on San Miguel. This is Point Bennett. There's about 35,000 California sea lion pups born annually on San Miguel. And the population's grown from about 70,000 to about 300,000 in the last 25 years. This is, again, San Miguel, the rookery. We talked about a little bit about El Niños and the blob. This is 2014. And 2014 and 2015, the cohorts that were born on San Miguel, about 90% of them died. So that yellow inset, so what during the pupping season, the females give birth to a pup, and then they nurse for 3 or 4 days, and then go out to sea. They come back and nurse the pup. So they repeat that nursing, going to sea, nursing. These pups, the yellow inset, actually most of those pups on these beaches are actually abandoned pups. Like if you look at them, they're really skinny. These pups are all dying from starvation. So what the blob did is, in El Nino, it basically disrupted the female's prey base. So they spent more time foraging, and like I said, about 90% of the pups that were born on San Miguel in 14 and 15 actually died. So that's the blob and El Nino events have significant impacts on these migratory species like California sea lions. They move up into the Northwest. This is the South Jetty. I mean, this is the jetty at the East Mooring Basin in Astoria. There's California sea lions. There's a Steller sea lion mixed in there. But usually they don't mix together. There can be 5,000 California sea lions in the mouth of the Columbia River in the fall. They move into the north and into the Salish Sea. This is actually, those are Trident submarines at Bangor. So Bangor is actually a big haul out site. They're calling out on subs and their port security barriers. And there's the big animal in the middle, 102Y, is actually a Steller sea lion that was branded as a pup on St. George Reef in Northern California. So they move into Puget Sound. This is January. This is the Foss barge area in Commencement Bay. So during the winter, there could be 150 to 250 sea lions south of in Commencement Bay, south into South Puget Sound. This is their the trends of accounts at four sites. So the top one is Bremerton. These are all Navy facilities. So the main haul-out sites right now in Puget Sound are on Navy facilities. Top one is Bremerton. Next one down is Everett. Next one is Bangor's Hood Canal, and the next one is the Manchester fuel dump. So what are they doing in Puget Sound? Again, their diet consists of hake, dogfish, salmon, herring. Other forage fish, pollock, skates, and squid. We've worked with the Navy in 2014, 15, 16, and we put tags on, satellite tags, and track movement of 30 California sea lions that were captured at Bremerton. And we captured 30 of them, and about 10 of them stayed in Puget Sound, the other 20 left, and I'm not going to talk about the other 20, but these are foraging locations of those, of three of those 10 animals that stayed in Puget Sound. So they were tagged at Bremerton and basically moved, some of them moved down to Nisqually during the winter chum run. This is Everett. There's a hall outside. This is Bangor. Where do they feed? So we have these kernel density foraging maps. So basically, they're foraging in central Puget Sound, north of Vashon and south of Whidbey. That's where the 10 animals that stayed, that's where they forage. This is in March, April, and May. So then in spring, and that's the sea lion picture. Now I want to talk about harbor seals. They're resident pinniped in Washington. This is a haul out site at Gertrude Island. There's about 300 harbor seals here. This is actually in the fall, and what you can see in this picture, if you look at it, most of the seals are kind of browny looking. They're actually molting at this time of the year. So from August till December, they molt and they spend more time on land hauled out. And the other thing that's happening is this is just after the pupping season, and most all of the pups that were born have weaned, and they're actually not hauled out right now. There's a few pups right in here, but most of these are adult animals. So the weaned pups and the juveniles aren't actually hauling out right now. They're in the fall. They're actually they're hauling out, but they're not as hauling out as frequently as the adults. There's about 300 haul out sites in Washington, spread from the outer coast to the inland waters. Noah recognizes four stocks, which are basically management units. There's an outer Washington, Oregon stock. There's about 16,000 harbor seals in that population, in that stock. The next stock is northern inland waters, which includes the Strait of Juan de Fuca, San Juan Islands, and Eastern Bays. There's about 9,000 harbor seals in that stock. The next two are Hood Canal stock, about 1,500 animals in that stock, and a South Puget Sound stock, which has about 1,500 harbor seals in it. There's genetic structuring during the pupping season, so the pups the females have site fidelity to a pupping site, and that's where the stocks are split out based on genetic differences during the pupping season. We also have a long-term data set from 1978 to now of aerial surveys, and we actually have a long-term boat survey counts that Scott Pearson does during his seabird survey. So we got a lot of data sets on harbor seals in particular. The states have divided up into 14 different geographic regions, so we've got counts for over 30 years from each of one of these regions. So then we can track what the population's been doing. So basically it grew from probably about 5,000 in the early 1970s, and it's reached about 30,000 by the late, by 2000, basically has leveled off. These are counts that go into that total population. So upper left is Strait of Juan de Fuca, what we call Eastern Bays on the right, which are Padilla, Skagit, Port Susan, San Juan Islands on the left, in the middle, and Hood Canal, Puget Sound, and inland stock in general. Those counts are through 2000. These are graphs showing what's happened. We plotted the counts that we had since 2000, and for the most part, the populations have either been stable or declining. The graph on the right hand side is actually Scott's harbor seal density data for the last 15 years from his boat surveys, and actually the density of harbor seals is declining on his boat survey, so indicating that the population is actually declining. Why is that? We don't really know. These are transients that are cruising by a haul outside. This is actually a transient with a seal in its mouth. This is a transient with a seal in his mouth. So we don't really know what the impact of transients are, but in the last 10 years, there's been more transients in Puget Sound than there have been the southern residents. So there is some evidence that actually the transients are taking a big bite out of that population, but there's really no way to really know if they are. SCAT information, so focusing back on Puget Sound and the South Sound, we collected from Commencement Bay, and the N numbers are the number of SCATs that we collected at each one of these sites. So the last 3 years we've been doing SCAT collection, so we got a big sample size. So we do diet from SCATs. So what is a SCAT? It represents what was eaten by a seal. It's actually in the previous meal, and it's actually passed out over a 72-hour period in up to 10 SCATs, So each SCAT has some component of a previous meal. So no SCAT has all the remains of what it ate. So when we collect SCATs, it's a partial picture of what they're actually eating. It contains digested and degraded hard parts, and as well as DNA. It can be used to do diet among individuals by season, by region, and by haul-out site. That's what a SCAT looks like. So that's a fish SCAT. So what we've been seeing over in Carr Inlet, this is near Cuts. So this is actually shrimp remains. So we've basically been seeing this is another SCAT full of shrimp. So shrimp is actually a pretty big diet component for seals in South Puget Sound. It's one that doesn't get picked up very well with DNA. These are primarily coonstripe shrimp is what the shrimp is. It's not pink shrimp, and it's coonstripes. We pick them up in bags, take them back to the lab. We extract DNA, we extract the hard parts, and we do the ID. We can get percent diet from DNA. We can identify species, and we can distinguish between adults and juveniles. This is just a pie chart. This is actually, I'm going to go through four complicated slides. May and June diet of harbor seals. So the yellow is gadids, primarily hake. The lighter blue is herring, clupeids. Surf perch is green. Cotted sculpins are dark blue. Flatfishes are brown. The gray is cephalopods, squids and octopi, and then the red box is the percentage of salmonids in the diet. So this is, I'm gonna go through the samples. I'm gonna go through January, February, March, April diet samples. The N is the number of SCATs that we collected, and you can just see, and the arrows just indicate, again, yellow is gadids, primarily hake, and I'm gonna just kind of talk about the hake, the yellow bars and the gray bar. The gray bar is cephalopods, and the one thing we can, if you look at the cephalopod bar graph, one thing that you see is that hard parts, the blue are hard parts, the pink are DNA. What hard parts give you 25% of the diet, we're using hard parts, that's beaks, and primarily beaks to ID them. The hard parts pick up cephalopods, and the DNA doesn't pick up cephalopods. For the sculpins, it's the reverse. The DNA picks up more than the hard parts. So depending on what you're looking at, they give you different answers. The red boxes are the salmon in the diet, and it's pretty low. In January, that chum salmon blurb, a little bump there with chum salmon, detected on DNA. We didn't see chum salmon in hard parts, and it's because those chum are probably these little 3 to 4 inch long, really small fish that are totally digested, but they're in, the DNA goes through, but the hard parts are digested. So that's January. Again, there's a little bit of difference here. This is February. Again, there's changes going on. Cottids are going up. This is March. Again, cottage sculpins go up in March. This is April. The yellow bar is hake, primarily. Gadids, 50% of their diet is hake. Again, if you look at the salmon, it's pretty minimal. The squid is actually disappearing from their diet because the squid is disappearing from the system. And again, this is May and June combined. Now herring becomes a dominant species, the prey for harbor seals in May and June. Getting back to the bar graph again, this is actually the composite from May and June. Again, gadids, coupeids, surf perch, cottids, flatfish, and squid and octopi are the main species. What do they eat in South Sound? What do harbor seals eat? They're generalists. They eat prey that's abundant and seasonally available. And like Dave was saying, we have biomass information, but we don't have a lot of details on seasonality and distribution of these prey that they eat. So that's a big hole in doing an ecosystem model. We need that information to tie these things together. Their diet in South Puget Sound, they eat 50 different species. It's dominated by hake and forage fish, followed by perch, sculpins, and flounders. They eat a lot of cephalopods. And only about 4% of their diet is salmon. They eat both adult and juvenile salmon. And even though that's a small amount, if we've got ESA listed or if we're having salmon runs that are in trouble like Chinook, a small amount of predation may be significant for recovery of those species that are in trouble. And then I guess in summary, it's very complicated. Our models really don't deal with the complexity of what's going on out there. It's dynamic. It involves consumption by a number of marine predators, harbor seals, harbor porpoise, cormorants, Caspian terns. And if we want to model it, we need to look at a seasonal abundance of the population, their distribution, their seasonality, how are they distributed spatially and temporally, which is what we're trying to do now with the diet data that we've got. The diet data is variable. And there's synergy between all of these components. And if we understand how these components work, it works into the, it supports an ecosystem-based management system. So, which typically we're just doing single species management and we need to manage at an ecosystem basis. So I think that's, we'll end with that. Those are seals that are hauled out on Eagle Shoals, just south of McNeil Island. So I think I'll answer some questions.
If we have time. One question for Steve. Questions for Steve? Are you moving towards the mic?
Thanks for the talk. One of the most controversial actions that's being considered in the Orca Task Force world today is pinniped management. And your data suggests that salmonids are, you know, a few percent of their overall prey base. And yet we're hearing from a lot of the fishing community that they feel like the seals in particular, but sea lions to some extent, are taking a significant chunk out of their catches. How do you resolve that, given that your data shows that it's a small amount of the prey base, but the fishing community sees that as a bigger consumption rate?
Megan Moore is going to talk about the impacts of harbor seals on the 1 o'clock talk. So that's the I didn't really get into the Salmonid side of it. Megan's going to talk a little bit more about the work we've been doing with harbor seal predation on Salmonid stocks. But, I mean, for me, the thing that's going on is we've got all these, if you looked at the Chinook salmon report card for the Salish Sea or Puget Sound, all of these Chinook stocks are pretty dire straits. And once you've got these populations depressed, the fact that just a small percentage of predation on a depressed or really depressed run of fish can have a significant impact. So I think what's, first off, we're probably not going to cull all the harbor seals out of Puget Sound. I mean, it's not going to happen under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. All the stock stuff that I talked about, it sets a limit. The MMP actually protects marine mammals as functioning members of the ecosystem. So there are limits under the MMP. It's called potential biological removal. So if, and it's a calculation based on the stock number. So in Puget Sound, there's only 3,000 or there's 1,500 harbor seals, and the PBR for level for harbor seals in Puget Sound, which is the allowable level of take that would be you could have under the MMPA, is probably less than 50 animals taken for management. So we're talking about in this salmon pinniped forum that's going on, this discussion, because the PBR levels are so low, you're going to have to identify areas that have the highest value for recovery of salmonids, river systems. Maybe the Nisqually is a good one. And look at how you can allocate those PBR takes in a management regime. And that's all kind of hypothetical, because there's really no management of marine mammals right now. They're totally protected. So we have to go from protection conservation to a comprehensive management program, but that's a ways down the line. So it's complicated.
Hold on. I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
We got time
there
for another one? Yeah, I just want to follow up on that last question real quick and ask, you know, are there any outliers as far as the COs? You know, you hear about these rogue outliers that, you know, have very different diets that tend to hang out, you know, right in front of hatcheries and whatnot. So wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean stay tuned for Megan's talk. There are probably individuals that select for salmonids. I'll give you an example. We worked on summer chum predation on Hood Canal a number of years ago, and they feed on chum. They enter. This is in the Dosia Wallops and the Duckabush. They enter those rivers. They feed on chum, but they come in on high tide, so that they don't have access to those river systems until the tide comes in. And the same thing is true in the Nisqually. When the tide goes out, everything dries up, kind of. But there were six individual seals that were feeding on summer chum, only six. And at the same time that those six were at high tide, they were in the river feeding on chum. At the same time, there were 150 seals hauled out. They haul out at high tide. So there were 150 seals hauled out at high tide that weren't foraging at high tide on salmon. So again, I think you're right that there's individuals. And again, if I was in charge of managing marine map seals right now, I would go into these river systems and look and see if there are river systems that have Chinook or salmon runs that are in trouble. And they have a you know, there's a reasonable amount of success in recovery. There's hope, I guess, that you can recover these river systems. Some river systems were probably not going to recover. Some of them are. We need to do habitat restoration, and then go into those river systems that have the most. Have a spatial overlap with pinniped predation and selectively remove those individuals. And you could go into the Nisqually, you could go into the Skagit, and you could remove individuals that are up these river systems, feeding on, they're actually, go back to Hood Canal, the seals that were going up in high tide, feeding on summer chum, they actually are going on spawning grounds, killing adults on spawning grounds. So I would start with those guys. And we actually did a report to Congress in 1999 and called for site-specific management based on basically that type of information, that there are individuals that you could get rid of that are the primary salmon predators that are in these river systems. And not, first off, I said this before, you're not going to cull the population. You're not going to reset it. The MMPA protects them. And if you drop if you cull the population too far, you're going to drop below what's called OSP, and then they become protected under the MMPA. So you're going to have to play around with those numbers and do site-specific management in areas where you know that you can do some good.